music was said to have inspired Nelson Mandela during his time in prison. Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues is Saturday, August 17th at Kenosha's Lakefront. Tickets are available at MahoneFun.org or at Tanuta's Deli.
When the summer came, you were not around. Now the summer's gone.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters here on WGTD. I'm so glad that you've joined me today because I have a very special guest with me, Kim Zelko. And many of you in the Southeast Wisconsin area may recognize that name from a variety of things that Kim has been involved in. But today we're going to talk about a very personal journey that she has been on for 15 years. In part because I think there's much for all of us to learn from this, and also because there have been some absolutely amazing changes in her life because of this. So, Kim, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so glad you're here.
Yes.
And so we're going to hear from you, at least the first part of the show, about your son, Tyler. Tyler is how old now?
Tyler is going to be, I have to actually think, what year are we in? He was born in 86. I lose track. He's going to be close to 40 soon. I mean, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. You don't look like you could possibly have a son.
I'm 62. He keeps me, I guess, young. Yeah, he was born on New Year's Eve in 86. So, yeah, he'll be
New Year's Eve.
He's a New Year's Eve baby.
Oh, mm-hmm. All right. I had a friend who was a New Year's baby.
Well, he wasn't, he was sectioned out so that I got the tax break for both years.
Oh.
And I was off of work. I'm a nurse. I was off of work. So I was like, this is perfect time. Let's just do this and I can go back to work.
Yeah, even though the poor child is going to get cheated out of a birthday because of the holidays. Although friend Ellis said, the whole world celebrates his birthday.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we do a big party. And we don't even call it New Year's Eve. It's Tyler's birthday party. The kids have to bring a gift to come, and we decorate.
I love it.
We have fun. We have fun with it.
So tell us about the journey that you and Tyler have been on for the last 15 years.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow. Has it been something? I made a post on October 22nd, which was the first social media post I had ever done in the 15 years. With the only picture that I have of Tyler while he was in a coma on life support, it was the only picture that I have. I didn't take any pictures. I was told he was going to die. I just could not bring myself to take photos. So that picture was actually taken probably 2 to 3 weeks after he had been there.
How did this happen?
He was in a single vehicle auto accident. We don't know if an animal crossed the road, if a car changed the center light. He lost control of his truck. He was in a big truck. It was really crazy because he crossed the line. He hit 3 utility poles, which I got the bills for those utility poles. It was really nice. I'm not kidding. He rolled, and I had to pay them. Two were We Energies, and one was AT&T. I had to pay those. He rolled his truck. He did not have his seatbelt on, which honestly, and I wouldn't tell your kids this, but it did save his life. He was ejected, but he was ejected 130 feet from his vehicle.
Oh, my.
So when this happened, it was around 2 in the morning or so. We got the call at 2:22. It'll always stick in my head. But the people that lived in the houses that were near there heard something. They looked out, saw the poles down, saw a truck on its roof. They didn't want to go out and see. So they called 911. Ironically, right before they dispatched to the area, a police officer, she was driving past that area. She happened to see this. So she stopped. She looked around. She could not find anybody. And so she called it in thinking it was a drunk driver that maybe walked away or something. The most amazing thing happened, though, after she made that call, she heard something gasp, which nobody can explain because Tyler was virtually dead, quite honestly. But she heard something. So she took her flashlight. She walked 130 feet from the truck, and she found him. She immediately ran to her car. She intubated him. Thank God, because it saved his life. But if he would have waited, he would have not been here. So literally, angels, God, whatever you want to believe in, I guess. But he was truly a miracle that he was even found and life-saving measures were taken. It was quicker for them to load him in an ambulance than use Fight for Life because he was in Elk Creek. So by the time you get the helicopter up in the air and land, it's going to take longer than just get him in an ambulance and fly. So we got the call at 2:22 that morning. I just remember the phone was ringing. My husband answered, and I looked at my digital clock. Everybody had the little clock radios then, you know. And sure. I looked, it was 2:22, and he didn't say much. He hung up, and he said, get dressed. We have to go. Tyler's at Freighter. And I went, oh. I couldn't, like, you can't even think. I think that's all I said. And I said, how is he? He said, they won't tell me. Which, you know, my husband's a physician, I'm a nurse. You know what that means.
Right.
I stood in my closet and I literally, I couldn't even grab some clothing. Like, I was frozen and my husband's like, come on, Kim, we got to get going. What are you doing? I said, I don't know what to wear. Like, I couldn't just grab a sweatshirt and grab a pair of pants or sweatpants or something and throw it on. I couldn't do it. So he pulled something off. I put it on. We didn't say a word the whole way there. We just, both of us had it in our heads. We're going to get there and they're going to tell us he's deceased.
Yeah.
And I was frozen. I mean, we got out, we walked in. The first person that we saw was the police officer that intubated him. She was amazing. I gave her a hug. I hadn't even asked how he was yet. She said, I intubated him, but it does not look good. And I just had to take a deep breath and I told her, thank you for trying.
Oh.
You don't really know what to say. And then we were brought in. He looked beautiful, but he was...
Really?
He looked beautiful, other than his ear was severed. But otherwise, he looked beautiful, but his eyes were closed. He was not moving. He looked dead. He was in a coma. He was not in an induced coma. He was in a very deep coma.
Mm-hmm.
They told us then, or maybe within the first half an hour or hour, that he had a C2, C3 fracture, which is the same fracture that Christopher Reeve had.
Yeah.
So you're trying to process that, as far as my son may be paralyzed now from the neck down. You're trying to, and then they come through and they tell us that he has a severe diffuse axonal brain injury.
And what does that mean?
It means that the entire brain is affected. If you have a frontal brain injury, it's just the frontal lobe. Okay, you can have frontal, you can have a temporal brain injury, which is on the side of your head. His, it was the entire thing. So we went back and we looked at the scans, and it looked like fireworks went off in his brain. There was absolutely nothing connected, nothing. Oh. It was just like fireworks in your brain. Nothing is connected. So that was actually, in many ways, worse news at that point than the C2, C3 fracture. Because we didn't know if it went to the spinal cord yet or not. If it didn't go to the spinal cord, well, that can heal. If it went through to the spinal cord, well, then you're talking paralysis. But to have your whole brain gone and possibly, you don't even know what to say. From there, it gets worse because then they bring me the organ donor sheets and they tell me that he's not going to make it. And I tell them I won't sign it. We would have. We are all organ donors and we would have, but I was not going to say that at that time because I wasn't giving up. So we're not giving up. So I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to buy into the conspiracy theories that let you die if you sign it. I'm not even going there. Right. But I just was not comfortable signing at that point because I wasn't done. And so I refused to sign it. And it was a very long couple hours. And then we looked at our watches and it was like 7. We had left we have 5 other children. And at the time, I was homeschooling 4 of them by choice. My kids always had a choice, public, private, or homeschool. You can do whichever you want. You can change it semester. It didn't matter to me. So 4 of them by choice were homeschooled. And we left the kids home because my second oldest son was, I believe he was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
So we woke him up, put him on the couch, mm-hmm. told him we have to go to the hospital. We don't know what's going on. We kept him calm. We really didn't say much, but we had to go. But my husband wanted to be there when the kids woke up because we knew they'd be very upset. The girls were very little. Like, my girls were very young. So he left to go home to talk to the kids, which, you know, obviously a lot of tears and heartache
That
it was pretty bad. And then he brought them back up to see him because they kept telling us Tyler's going to die. And the kids really wanted to see him and say goodbye if he died. So they came into the ICU one at a time, giving him kisses and love and But the staff and the psychologists that were afraid were really telling me not to do it because my kids were young, especially the girls were really young, and they said, don't do it. It's going to traumatize them. It's going to make them always remember him. I said, I have to, because my kids are realists. I've always been very truthful with my children, and I feel that I can't, if something, God forbid he does die, I go home and they say, well, why didn't you let us see him and give him a kiss and a hug and love on him and tell him how much we love him? I can't take that away from them. So I gave the kids the choice. Do you want to see him or not? He looks fine. We had his ear taped up at the time. He looks fine, but he looks like he's sleeping, and he's not going to know you, you know?
Yeah.
So the kids all went in, and it was hard. It was really hard, but So yeah, that was our very first night, and then I get so much better after that.
Tell me, mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me this. Having a husband that's a physician can be a blessing and a curse.
Correct.
Especially under these kinds of circumstances.
Absolutely.
First of all, what kind of physician is he?
My husband was OBGYN for probably 30 years. My husband is 70 now.
Okay.
So he's older than me. Retired. For about 30 years. And then he switched over. We have our own medical aesthetics practice, Zelko Aesthetics. So he had switched over, I would say, maybe a year before this, or maybe a little less. So we were just starting a brand new business, too.
My gosh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So
and
he
yet
had,
he is trained as a physician. So
yes.
He's come up against this situation somewhere along the way.
Yeah. Yes.
How did that help, or how did it make it, how did it help you? How did it make it more difficult for him?
It does help and hurt. It helped because of, granted, I'm a nurse, but he's a physician. So, you know, so if I had questions or sometimes something would pop in my head because I read everything, every test, every scan, every whatever, I read it all. And there were times when I would say, you know, I'm looking at this and I don't see the reason to do this, or I think we need to do this. And he would either say yes, or he understood maybe better than me why this or that wasn't being done.
Okay.
We bounced things off. Where it came in not so great is because he will second guess every physician. It doesn't matter. He will, nope, you know, and then he will reach out to people that he knows all over the country.
Yes.
And talk with them, and he'll say, no, I talked to Dr. So-and-so, who's right now in California. He's heading to this place, and they disagree. We need to do... So that can be bad, because sometimes I'll be like, no, it's okay. And he would say, no, this is what... And we were going back and forth. But, you know, at the end of the day, we were just trying to do the absolute best we could to get the best possible outcome, which, you know, was very up in the air. It wasn't good. The prognosis was very, very, very bad.
Yeah. So tell me how the coming weeks went for you.
Well, it was rough. So that happened. I came to the hospital in my one, it was a sweatsuit outfit. I don't know. I just remember that's what he threw to me. That's what I put on. So I was in that. After a day or two, some friends brought up, they went to the Dollar Tree and they bought me underwear, a toothbrush, toothpaste, a t-shirt, like, because... And some body wipes so I could wipe down, because I wasn't leaving. Once I was there, I was not
right.
leaving. And there was, my son was in the hospital for almost 3 months, and I went home two nights.
Oh, Kim.
In those 3 months, I went home two nights. I stayed at the hospital. I was with my son 24/7. I would not leave.
Was the hospital supportive of you being there?
No. Okay. Sacred Heart was great.
And that was the rehab center.
That was the rehab.
Yeah.
No, Frederick for the first, I would say 3 weeks, they wanted me out pretty bad, but I'm a force to be reckoned with. So, I can imagine that would be why. However, they finally, after 10, 12 days, because I had no chair to sleep in, I found myself a little corner between two vending machines, and I would lean against the wall and drop there and then sleep for maybe a half an hour and then go back to the ICU room. It was pretty bad. Then they finally gave me a chair in a janitor's closet to use once in a while after hours, which that's fine. I don't care. It didn't matter. I wasn't leaving. Then they sent I don't know if it was a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm not really sure. But they wanted me to talk to someone, and I'm like, I'll talk to anybody. I can talk to a tree. So that's fine. So I meet with this person, this woman, And she's like, you know, I talked with the staff. They really need you to go home and get some sleep. We're all really worried about you. I said, yeah, I'm sure you are. That's why you gave me a chair, right?
Yeah. In the closet.
Let's be real. Yeah, let's be real. And she said, and then we can call in a sleeping pill for you, and we can get you started on some antidepressants. And I said, so you want to drug me and send me home? Wrong. Not happening. I don't want your sleeping pills. I don't want any drugs. I'm coping. I'm handling this, but I'm on point. I might be tired, but I'm on point. And I'm not leaving. And there's nothing you can do. I can wander the halls of the hospital all night long if you want to kick me out of the ICU, which you can't legally do either, and then we're going to have a problem too. So I know my rights. I know what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to do, like it or leave it. That was the end of that. I didn't go home. And I didn't take their meds.
Good
so,
for you.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to. It was hard because the first, it probably went on for probably 3 weeks. And I never knew about it. There's something called neural storms. And I didn't know what they were, didn't even know the word. And I was with Tyler. My friend had come from Monroe to be with me for the day. And we were by Tyler's bedside. And all of a sudden, his body lifts up. He's shaking like you wouldn't believe, sweating profusely, his whole body. Now, he has a C2, C3 fracture, and he's in a full body cast at this point. And his whole body is lifting up. It was terrible. I thought he was seizing. I go running out in the hallway saying, my son is having a massive seizure. I don't know what's going on. This is really bad. They come running. And it's called neural storms. And it basically, it storms his brain. And then what it does is cause very high temperatures. His temperatures were 102.8 all the time. Sweating. Oh. He would storm. And you never knew when it was coming. All of a sudden it would start. And it was really traumatic. Like shake the whole bed.
Sure.
And so then they had to keep him on ice, basically turn down the temp in the room really, really low to keep his temps down, which made me freeze. I had people bringing me blankets and mittens and wool socks. I was so cold in there to try to break it. But this went on for weeks, and it was very scary. So they had to add another medication. So it was really bad. Then November 7th, so he had only been in the hospital a little over 2 weeks, and he gets MRSA and pneumonia. MRSA is, you know, everybody knows what MRSA is. It's really hard to get rid of. You get it in hospital. So now my kid's got MRSA. He's neurostorming. He's in a full body cast. He's in a coma. He's got a trach, yada, yada. I did get them to reattach the ear. Yeah, because I lied on a form. When they found out that I did. And I'll own that. Like, take me to jail. That's what I always say. Take me to jail.
Yep.
They weren't going to reattach it because I didn't have power of attorney because I didn't do it. My son was over 18, and if you don't have power of attorney, you got nothing to say about anything.
Oh, he's an adult. Yeah.
He's an adult. And but they did reattach it.
He wasn't an adult.
Yeah. No. And so somebody happened to come through because I was demanding that the ear get reattached and came through, had me sign a paper. I signed it, sent him down, and we did it. Guardian Light was not happy with me, and I said, sue me. I don't know. Do you. He had MRSA, and the storming. It was terrible. I made a couple notes because I had saved all my journaling notes. I was on Caring Bridge, and I had to kind of review them a little bit just for dates, but it's the first time I've read it in 15 years. I read through all my journaling notes.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it. Couldn't. I couldn't do it.
You lived it. You didn't.
I lived it. It's definitely in my brain, but I wanted to kind of remember the sequence. But yeah, by December 2nd, he was down 30 pounds. So he was looking really, really gaunt. You know, you're just watching somebody who his eyes are closed. Something is breathing for him. He's losing weight. He's got pneumonia. He's got MRSA. They're pumping him full of meds. It's hard. And all you do is stare at the wall, stare at the monitors. That's all you do.
Sir.
And you pray. If you're me, you pray. You pray a lot. Mm-hmm. And I had a really, my family is, my parents, my brother, my sister, my aunt, my uncle, my cousins, they're all fabulous. My husband's an only child, and his mom lived in Florida. But I have an amazing, supportive family, and I had an amazing community behind me, the homeschool community, Lutheran High. My son went to Lutheran High. They were all wearing Tyler's T-shirts. They were doing fundraisers.
I remember.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, the community just, on a much smaller scale than nowadays when people have it. You know, it was much more, but it was really grassroots because I had made up my mind from the night I walked into that ER that I was bringing my boy home. I was bringing my boy home. And so one of the homeschool moms was like, let's get together a group and let's get this, because I had to have an addition. At the time I lived, we moved 2 years ago, but I still in the house. We had a 100-year-old house, a farmhouse style home. We didn't have a first floor bedroom. I didn't have a bathroom on the first floor that we could make accessible. And I knew this was going to be long term. So they started, we all started together to try to put an addition on the existing home because I was bringing my boy home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's absolutely amazing.
It really is.
We're going to take a quick break right now.
Sure.
And when we come back, we're going to hear about what brave moms can do when they've made up their minds to bring their kids home. And then we're going to hear about the fantastic changes that have been made in
time. Amazing changes.
Yeah.
Look forward to it.
So you're listening to Community Matters here on WGTD 91.1 FM. Welcome back to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Connett, your host. My guest today is Kim Zelko. And Kim is here sharing a very personal story that should be of interest to all parents. Those parents who may have had to deal with the kind of tragedy that Kim was faced with, and those of us who managed to avoid that bullet, but could any day have to deal with this. And also just because it's an incredible story. So now your son has been in the hospital following this horrible car accident.
Yes.
And he's been there, what, 3 months now?
It'll be a total of almost 3 months, not quite, between the rehab and the hospital. He wasn't progressing in order to stay, like on a brain injury unit at Frederick or even at Sacred Heart, you have to be progressing with like the JFK coma scale. You can Google the JFK coma scale. That's how they decide what state you're in. If you stop progressing, you get booted out. Then it's time to go to a nursing home or whatever. Yeah. So he got to a point we never even made it to the brain injury unit at Frederick because he wasn't progressing at all. So our next step was to find a rehab unit. We chose Sacred Heart. We went to Sacred Heart and they, I can't remember. Well, I think we went there right before Christmas and I left February 1st. Anyway, he was at the Sacred Heart. It was fabulous. Sacred Heart was great. Old, because it's in the Columbia. I'm sure it moved now, but it was in the Columbia building, and I went to nursing school at Columbia. So I was very familiar with Columbia. Very, very old. Staff was amazing. They got me a cot. I did all the tube fittings. I did all the any dressing changes. I took care of.
You were still living in.
Yes. I never left. I rode in the ambulance with him. From freighter to, we had to pull the ambulance over on the highway because they discharged him with MRSA. They denied it, but they did. He had a positive test and they said it's negative. He can go. We got to Columbia or to Sacred Heart. They retested him. It was, I knew it was, but he was so congested. We had to pull over the ambulance on the interstate. My husband and my mom were following and they're like, why is the ambulance pulling over? And I'm messaging them saying, we just got to suction him out. He can't breathe. So I was with him for that transport. And we got to Sacred Heart. They were very welcoming, very, very kind to me, to my son. He had therapy 7 days a week, PT, OT, speech.
Oh.
He still had his eyes open. He wasn't saying a single word. He wasn't doing anything. He was in a vegetative coma. And so it pretty much stayed that way. When we left because the state sends a guardian ad litem. If you don't have that power of attorney, the state sends in a guardian ad litem. They assign you one. You get to pay for them. And then you get to hire your own attorney and fight the guardian ad litem when they decide that, no, this kid is never. When we left Frederick, they said, what you see is what you're going to get. There's no hope. Like this, your kids. So the guardian ad litem decided you can't send this kid home with five other kids in the house. Mom is going to be too busy, even though somehow I've been able to stay with him.
Exactly.
Kind of crazy. But he just didn't like me. And that was fine. He didn't have to like me. I wasn't looking for people to like me. But anyway, the state comes in and then they say, okay, well, he's not making any more progress. So here's some choices of nursing homes for you. That's what they hand you. And I'm like, okay, well, we're not. I'm going to take him home. And then they say, the nurses clued me in as to what day the ambulance was coming to take him with police. The state was coming to take my son. They told me about a week ahead of time. My brother ran, I think, to Ohio or Iowa. I just can't remember. And he bought me a handicap accessible van. The nurses helped me get everything ready. My parents, my grandmother had lived with them the last decade or so of her life. So they already had, in Germantown, they already had an accessible addition on their home. So that's where I was going. So my mom came at 5 in the morning on the 1st. The nurses helped us. And the only thing at that point Tyler could do is we could get him sitting up into a wheelchair. His eyes were open now. He could give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and he could point a little bit. He wanted out. He gave a thumbs up, pointed to the door. He wanted to go home. And I would say, do you want to go home? And he'd be like, you know, I'm pointing. So that's how far he had gotten. But he wasn't doing more. But that was huge to me. Like, we're communicating. You know, totally. He wants to go home. He's coming home whether he wants to go home or not, because he's coming home with me.
Well, and I love that the nurses were on your side.
Oh, the nurses were amazing. I wouldn't have known what day. And so what I did was we left. I left a note on the bed because I knew that they were coming. And I just said, you can come and arrest me. I gave them the address that I was at. Come and arrest me. This is where my son is. So I wasn't hiding.
You're right.
There's my information. They didn't. But I was threatened in court and, you know, whatever. And so that cost a lot of money to go through all of that. But I did it. I kept fighting. And I'm like, no, you're not taking my child from me. He wants to be with me. And they said he doesn't know he's talking about him. Talk to him. He'll give you a thumbs up. Sometimes he gets tired, but, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we got home. We moved in with my parents. We were there probably about 5 months, and then the addition was finished. So we moved Tyler back home. We were finally a family again. We moved home. I wrote it down. 8/27, we finally moved home.
Wow. How did the other children react?
Well, what happened was the younger three came and lived at my mom's house with me, so I could continue to homeschool them easily. So Tyler would be at the head of the, he was learning right with them, reading Dick and Jane and whatever we were doing. And then my niece and nephew lived two houses over, and they went to school. But when they were done with school, they would come over for all the fun stuff we were doing because we were homeschooling. And so we had a lot of creative stuff, and then Tyler would join in, and it worked out really well. I'm very, very close to my parents. They're my best friends. I love my parents. And it's amazing. So it was it was a great thing. It was absolutely fine. It was nice for me because my mom did all the cooking, you know, so she, you know, for all of us, so I didn't have that burden. It did make it a lot easier for me for those, because I was trying to get into a routine and he had to be rolled every 2 hours and it was backbreaking and getting him out of bed, and my parents would help me, you know, get him up and get him dressed and then lay him down in the afternoon and re-toilet training, teaching him to eat again. Cause they started him on, he came home on 30 different medications. And I always argued, I said, why are we medicating him? How is he ever going to come out of a coma? Like, you give me 30 pills, I'm in a coma too. And they said, he'll never eat. Don't even try to feed him. I found a perfect doctor before I left. I reached out everywhere. I needed a doctor that was going to listen to me, that was going to be more holistic, that didn't want to drug my kid, that would listen to me. I'm working with him, I do know. And we got him eating again, pulled the feeding tube out.
So he was able to chew and swallow and all those other important things.
We practiced with a straw. I learned from the speech therapist what to do. I reached out to other people. How can I encourage chewing, swallowing with no aspiration pneumonia or anything? So I reached out. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just my husband. We reached out everywhere. Anybody that had an idea, I was going to try it. Because no dumb idea, unless I've tried it, it doesn't work for him, but it might work for somebody else. But it worked. Got him play school toys where he could press the alphabet from Goodwill. You know, just practice that and that kind of stuff. And we had a lot of laughs, a lot of good times. Sad, but actually joyful. I'll be honest, joyful, because there was light there. I had hope. When you got hope, you've got something to move forward, and that's what you're always looking for is hope. And I'm not a quitter. I'll never quit on anything that I start. No, not a quitter. So, yeah, it was a got him up walking. I can walk him now myself.
Oh, really?
He has a power wheelchair just for ease sometimes for me, or just if it's long distances, but I can walk him myself. I bought him a Rifton bike last summer. He can bike now, which is amazing. He bikes 2 to 5 miles every single day. Even in the snow, you'll see us going down the road.
That's amazing.
It's really crazy what he's been able to accomplish. But his biggest goal is he wants to keep progressing. He wants to get better. For people to say, oh, this is it. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
There's always new things out there.
Yeah.
Always.
So 15 years.
Yes.
He has been learning and growing and,
yes,
and regaining.
Yep.
He's verbal.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's
hard to understand him. He was diagnosed back in April of that following year with esophageal and laryngeal paralysis. So it is kind of hard to understand him. But if it's kind of quiet and if you really listen, and once you start to get it, you'll get more of it.
Sure.
But he can talk. He texts me all the time. Mom is his favorite word.
Oh, he texts?
He'll text. Yeah, he's got a cell phone.
Okay.
He'll call me.
So what about the paralysis?
On the left side of his body? It's the left side of his body that is affected. He has pretty much... He can move his shoulder if he and tries to lift it on the left side. He has no use of his left hand.
Okay.
And his left leg is like it's like a tree stump, basically. It's super stiff. It's hard to bend and that kind of stuff. But that's okay. I'll take it.
But the right side?
The right side's great. He's super strong. So the right side, he can lift. He can use the quad cane or the cane that he's got. And I can support the left side. He's got real good stability. And so that's great, but, you know, we build on what we have. We try to regain, or if there's something new out there, we're probably going to try it and see if it works for us or not.
Sure.
Some of the equipment that I use that was absolutely amazing, I have sent to Minnesota for a young man who they couldn't afford it. It was a Rifton gait trainer, and that's what I used to get him to start walking. They're very expensive, but I had bought one, and it helped us, and they came from Minnesota to pick it up after a young man had a very similar type of thing. He is now walking also. And I told her, just pay it forward. Pay it forward. So I have a lot of different equipment that has worked for me that I'm always happy to share with people. You know, we've tried this or try that. A lot of it you can get on Amazon, not the Rifton. But we have a Rifton bike, too, that we had purchased for him.
That's great.
Yeah.
So tell us, how does Tyler spend his days? And tell me about the job he has.
Oh, my gosh. You know, there's nothing out there. There was nothing out there. And all the time I was searching for Tyler to have some friends, Tyler to be out in the public, Tyler not to just be an extension of me. Oh, that's Kim's son in a wheelchair. No, that's not my son in a wheelchair. He has his own identity. He has a lot to say. He's a very funny guy. Great sense of humor. He's very kind and very giving. And it has been very hard. Well, 4 years ago, I was in a dark place because I went in. I volunteer with FNAIL. Failure is not an option, and I have for a long time. And I went in there, and I was there like, Kim, what's wrong? And I said, I can't help him anymore. I don't know what to do. I'm his best friend. I'm his, like, only friend. It's wearing on me, but he's getting so down. He has nothing. And they said, well, what does he like to do? I said, he likes to read. He likes to write. He likes kids. I went on. Perfect. Let's start a book club program. And Tyler will be in charge of it. Well, fast forward today, and it's now 4 years he's been doing it, and it's called Fuel for Thought, and it's on Wednesdays, open to any child ages 4 through 10 and their sibling. It's a free program. We give the families groceries when they leave. We teach them how to cook. We do arts and crafts. There's story hour. There's so much to do. It's like an hour-long program, and it is free, and we hand them so much stuff. We provide for these kids. Tyler saves his money from his new job, and he buys bikes to raffle off and give away in May. We do a banquet. Yeah. And all kids, it doesn't matter where you're from, and it doesn't matter income requirement. All kids are invited. It's a fabulous program through FNAIL called Fuel for Thought. So he does that on Wednesdays. He works on all their book reports all week that they turn in. He's working at the Inclusive Bean, which is a brand new coffee shop on Albert Street. It's I was so excited. He had been hired. He was their first or second hire. When I heard about it, I reached out right away. I'm like, could you meet with my son? I know he'd be a great addition if you can use them. I didn't know because, I mean, he's an engineer. And they hired him. We waited about a year, year and a half for them to open. It's been great. I just picked him up from work today. He worked from 10:30 to 12:30 today. I just brought in a bunch of Kringle and charcuterie boards from Finnea. I went over to the trucks to the warehouse, volunteered for a little bit, brought it over. So tomorrow they're giving away charcuterie boards and Kringle. We're going to try to do that every Tuesday for anybody that comes in the coffee shop. I'm trying to tie some of these nonprofits together a little bit. So they come in, they get something for free.
And this is over in the old, like, Horlick.
Yes.
The milk building.
Yep, yep.
Kind of tucked in. You got to kind of drive in there.
You do. Yeah, it's 1930 Albert Street, and then there's signs there. It's a little bit tricky, but, oh, they have the most amazing drinks. I really like it, but it's a nonprofit, so all the money is going back, and they really are using the money for the right thing. They're employing people that, I mean, all these people are just amazing. Get to know them. Know their stories. I mean, they're using First Transit to get there. Some of them live in group homes. Some still live with families, but they're an amazing community, and it's about time. Thank God for them. He also goes to church every Saturday night. He likes to go Saturday nights. He loves Trinity Lutheran Church on Gould and Geneva. We've been going there forever. They pray every single service. They pray for Tyler, without
That's
a doubt.
Amazing.
And pastors are incredible. The whole community of churchgoers there are amazing. They've always had our backs, and they're there for me. Then we have Katie's Canine Clubhouse. Tyler is now working with them. We love Katie's Canine Clubhouse on Douglas. We got a new service dog. Tyler's passed away about a year and a half ago. So I took a chance on a puppy that they kind of thought that maybe this puppy would work out. And so we were hopeful because I really didn't need to add another dog because we fostered. But we did. And Katie and Melissa and the staff, they were right. He's working out great. His name is Andy. Andy the service dog in training. We're taking all the classes. But then they offer, twice a year, they offer therapy dog classes. And so Tyler's kind of their therapy dog ambassador because they need somebody in a wheelchair, somebody that most dogs don't see to be go around these dogs, see how they react. Are they going to bite, bark at them or nip at them or anything like that? So he loves. Absolutely. We love going to the classes. We take all the classes. I encourage everyone to take. Even if you have a great dog, you're always going to learn. I've been doing foster work for decades, and I'm always learning something when I go there. It's just a nice, nice group of people.
Oh, they
great
are.
They're just amazing.
I totally agree. I had both my dachshunds, who are virtually untrainable, go through their classes, and both were wonderful.
You can learn. Even if you think you know, you're always learning, and they have tricks, and they'll help. I mean, there's four trainers there for a class. They'll come over one-on-one and help you. Their daycare is phenomenal. I love using their daycare. It tires my dogs out and that kind of stuff. So, you know, they do the bathing and the nail trims. I don't have to. It's great.
Yep.
I totally agree.
Yep. Yep.
But we do that, and then Tyler also helps me. We foster puppies through Rescue Outreach, which is located on Main Street in Union Grove. So we just picked up some more puppies on Saturday, and then he helps me come up with – he'll sometimes take the pictures that I can blast, and we're always trying to get shares to get them homes. But he's a big part of that. He loves the puppies, and it works out well.
And what kind of puppies do we have now?
You know, they're always mixed breed. Rarely do I know. These certainly look like they're definitely have some pity in them. They're really sweet. Oh, my gosh. They're cute, sweet. But I love them all. Some are naughty, and I'll tell people, these are really naughty, and I feel bad for you if you take one. And I'm very honest. Because some are bad. I'm going to return, so I'd rather be honest from the get-go.
No,
you know, you're going to lose all your furniture or...
These
are
or
really
your
cute.
Shoes.
Sweet. Yeah, they're really sweet. We're having fun with them. Tyler was holding them this morning before he went to work because he has to have puppy snuggles a little bit too. So, you know, I'm getting him. He's getting out there. He's making more friends because you know what happens after an accident like that when you're that age? All your friends are gone.
At that age, it happens anyway. I mean, even if you hadn't, people are going off to college or they're going somewhere else or they're moving or
they're all gone.
Yeah.
They're all gone.
And especially in his situation.
Yeah.
You know, he was out of touch for months and months and months and months and really even years.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So life goes on and, you know, he has had nobody, no friends. So for over a decade, he's home with his siblings, his mom, his dad, his grandparents, aunt, uncle, which is great, and it's fun, and we do things. He goes crossbow hunting with my brother. We go fishing. I take him up north. But it's just more, this is something that I can drop him off at work, or he can run the book program, and everybody knows Mr. Tyler. And that's been great because a lot of children don't know what to do if somebody doesn't speak like you or I.
Or look like you.
Or look, you know, yes. Or are in a wheelchair, right? People, they hide behind, you see it.
Sure.
They whisper, they point, or they hide behind their parent, or because they don't know, it's something foreign. These kids come in, and it's, Mr. Tyler, hi, look at, I made you this, and they jump on his lap, and they give him hugs and kisses, and they don't even see that wheelchair. They don't realize he doesn't talk like you and I. And parents have said that. They're like, this program, just to be able to spend time with him, is teaching our children more about people. We all have disabilities, right? Some are more visual than others, okay?
Exactly.
And it's been a really good teaching opportunity within their families. I've had the husbands or the siblings come at the banquet each year. That's the only time I see them, and they'll be like, they come home all the time. They want to talk about what Tyler said, or Tyler was so funny today, or, and it's just opening things up, which makes me really happy. He has a voice. I want it to be heard. He has things to say. He can add value to society completely aside from me.
Right.
And people need to see that there's so many people that can add things to our lives that are maybe invisible to us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, and when we need to do that, and parents need to. There's one thing you got to take from this faith, believe in God. I'm not kidding. Tyler's a miracle. His brain scan still shows that his brain is completely fried.
Wow.
Okay. There's Starburst. Okay. Faith, trust your gut. Trust your gut, but also get that power of attorney.
Oh.
Your child turns 8, and I don't care if you have them sign it when they're 16 and put it in your safe, predate it. Because if you need it, you need it, and you need it quickly. Go to your safe, pull it out.
That is so important. So that
very
healthcare
important.
Power of attorney is
healthcare power of attorney. You
critical.
Can get them online. You can print them out online. You don't need to have it
hospitals
notarized.
Have them. Yep.
They're everywhere. It's really easy. But I hadn't done it, and when I went in and they asked me,
yep.
You
did what you had to do as a mom.
I did. I leave AMA.
Oh, my gosh. Kim, this has been absolutely amazing. I can't believe the time has just flown.
I know. It's cool.
So thank you. Important, important stuff for all of us parents here.
Oh, can I add one real thing real quick?
Real quick.
I'm really super excited, really, really fast. Michelle Reber reached out to me because of my post. She's a holistic medicine person, and she's doing a bioenergetic DNA analysis with his hair.
To find out
who causes for things, and hoping to empower his health journey. So I'm really excited about those results and what we can get with this.
Phenomenal.
I know. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks to all of you who've joined us today on Community Matters. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
This year's Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues headliner is South African musician Jonathan Butler. Butler has been described as one of the 50 greatest guitarists of all time, and his music was said to have inspired Nelson Mandela during his time in prison. Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues is Saturday, August 17th at Kenosha's Lakefront. Tickets are available at MahoneFun.org or at Tanuda's Deli.
When the summer came, you were not around. Now the summer's gone.
I'm Gregory Berg, and after 2 days off for Thanksgiving, the morning show returns on Monday with a conversation with Lawrence Spinelli, talking about his fascinating new biography of Peter Rodino, U.S. Representative from New Jersey, who chaired the House Judiciary Committee that oversaw passage of 3 articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon stemming from the Watergate scandal. The book is called Unexpected Hero. Join us for Monday's morning show beginning just after 8.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.